Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labor MP.
Good morning, I'm Phil Goff, Labor MP for Mount Roskill and your host today on Red Alert Radio on Planet FM 104.6. At the Labor Party conference recently, Labor leader David Shearer gave a really stunning speech. It had more than 1,000 Labor supporters on their feet and clapping enthusiastically. It was really a speech marked by hope and marked by vision. But what I want to focus on today was a particular quote that he used in it, which is actually one of my favourite quotes from former Labor leader and Prime Minister Norman Kirk. Kirk said that the people really didn't ask for much in life, but what their basic needs were, and the quote was, someone to love, somewhere to work, a home to live in, and something to hope for. I think that's a pretty good summary of what our basic needs are in life. David, of course, said that while Labor governments could achieve miracles, they couldn't necessarily provide everyone with someone to love. But a basic role of government on the other areas was really important to create an environment where people had a good job, a good home, and hope for the future. Today, I'm going to have as a guest Annette King. She is a Labor MP for Rongotai, and she's Labor spokesperson on housing. And I want to focus on housing. You know, it's a fundamental human need, shelter, isn't it? Having the security of a good home, it's basic to having good health. It's basic to having the stability and security that give your kids the chance to settle at a school and get a good education. It's basic to getting on with and enjoying your life. Most Kiwis, around 80%, traditionally were able to own their own homes. It was part of the Kiwi dream. Those that didn't and had low incomes could at least rely on the security and the affordability of a state house. Others rented in the private sector, where as long as there was adequate supply of rental housing, that stopped rents going through the roof, and a very good Residential Tenancies Act passed by me as Minister of Housing is actually, I think, my very first important piece of legislation in a committee on which Annette King served, a select committee, that set out the rights and the responsibilities of both renters and landlords and provided rental housing as a reasonable option. But I think it's fair to say that the housing market at present is in crisis. The opportunity to buy your own home has reduced significantly. 20 years ago, 1991, about 75% of New Zealanders owned their own home. Today, it's 65%. We've slipped from three-quarters of the population to just over two-thirds. And in fact, in Auckland, it's less than 60%. What does that mean? It means that 157,000 actually, families who would have lived in their own home in 1991, today can't afford to buy their own home and are living in rental accommodation. But what's really marked out of that is that the younger generation is finding it harder and harder. How do we know that? Well, take families where the mum or dad are generally under 40, less than half of those families get to live in a home of their own. Property prices have been pushed up by property investors and speculators. And of course, we know that people who invest in property, supposedly not as a living, but they make a lot of money out of it, pay no tax on their capital gains. Too few homes are being built. In Auckland at the moment, we're building fewer than 4,000 homes a year when we need 10,000 homes just to keep up with population growth. Hardly any homes are being built for those on modest incomes. With the gap between rich and poor growing, people, even with lower interest rates, simply can't afford a home of their own. So David Shearer at Labor's conference came out with new policy to address these problems. And there were four policy points. We were going to work with the private sector to build 100,000 modern, affordable homes for first home buyers over the next decade. Two, we're going to introduce a healthy homes guarantee so that every rental home is healthy, warm, and dry. 3. We're going to introduce a capital gains tax, not on the home that you own and live in, but a capital gains tax on property investors and speculators to take the pressure off house prices by discouraging speculation in the property market and encouraging investment in job-creating businesses instead. And fourthly, we're going to introduce what's called a national policy statement for affordable housing to give coherence to policy in this area to make it easier to get consents for affordable housing. Well, joining me on Red Alert Radio today is Labor's housing spokesperson, MP Annette King. Annette, welcome to the program. Right, well, you're in the hot seat today and you're going to explain to us what each of those policies actually mean, and most importantly, I think, for our listeners, how we can afford to do that. And maybe we can start with that, you know, I think a really ambitious and visionary policy, helping Kiwis into their first homes by building 100,000 modern affordable homes. How is Labor going to go about actually doing that? How is that deliverable?
Well, what we've been told, Phil, is that, and this is the government telling us this after the Productivity Commission report came out and they responded to it. They said, well, look, the problem is just local authorities. They just need to release some more land. And then with low interest rates, you know, houses will be built. That is not the answer. It is not even part of the answer. I have met with many people, spoken to those that build homes, those that want to build homes, and while land is an important issue, the real issue is access to capital. And unfortunately, there is not money available to build affordable homes. Those that want to build top-of-the-line homes, you know, the $700-800 million home, there has been money for that. And, of course, that's what we've been building. 5% of our homes that we've built in the last 20 years are affordable homes at the lower end, so very few have been built. Lack of money.
That's a bit different from the past, isn't it? I mean, if you go back to, you know, 60s, 70s, probably even into the 80s, a much bigger percentage of homes being built were affordable homes than the 5% you've just mentioned.
Absolutely. In the 60s and 70s, when home ownership was on the rise, 30 to 35% of the new houses built were entry-level homes. That proportion now is just 5. So you can see that big drop over time, which is making it incredibly difficult to find an affordable house to buy, forcing people into rental, long-term rental. In fact, forcing the age that a couple or a person might buy a home to a much higher age group. In fact, the average age a person buys a home today is 36 years of age. How old were you when you bought your first home?
Oh, I'm a bit ashamed to say. I think I was about 23. That was I'm not going to say, because Joe in the studio will think that I'm too old if I tell you
I was asked this question and I worked it out that I was 24.
Oh, really? Okay. That's what we did in those days.
This is the big change that our generation and even my parents' generation, with the help of a state advance loan and capitalisation on family benefit, you were able to get into your first home even on very modest incomes. So the lack of money to build these homes is the big part of our announcement. Who's going to stump up with the money? It is going to be the government. And we are going to raise this money through what we're calling Kiwi bonds, Kiwi home ownership bonds. In other words, New Zealanders can invest in government bonds that will go towards building affordable homes. Mum and dad investors can have Kiwi bonds, which means that the money that they lend to the government will go to build homes for their kids, their grandkids, you know, their family in the community, and they'll still get a reasonable return on that money that they have invested with the government.
And there'll be a bit of demand for that, won't there? Because, you know, you look out at what's happened in the last few years. I'm just thinking of the Ross Investments thing at the moment. So many people have invested their money, you know, supposedly big returns, but they've lost everything. And what Kiwis are looking for are areas where they can invest their money, which is secure, which gives them a reasonable return. And on top of that, the bonus that this is going for a very good purpose. It's going to help people into their homes. So instead of selling them the power companies that they already own, We'll make available Kiwi bonds. They can have a secure investment and they can help families get into their first home. I think that'll be pretty popular, won't it?
Well, we believe it will. It'll be a win-win, and we don't think we'll have any difficulty in raising over the period of the life of this project the $1.5 billion that we wish to put into the building of these homes. What's also good about it is as we build these, have these homes built, of course, the government's not going to build them. They will be built by the private sector, working with different agencies, different organisations. They will be doing the building. But as they are built, they will be sold, and the money comes back to the government, not looking for big profits on them. We're looking at a margin of only 1% on the money. So we're not looking to ramp up the prices, but we're looking to bring the money back into to the government and then reuse it again to build more houses. So it's like the money goes in, it builds, it's sold, the money comes back into the government, and we can build more houses. So it's got lots of box ticking, if you like. It's more to it than that as well, Phil, because although we can build 100,000 modern affordable homes over that 10-year period, we're also linking it to getting skilled jobs launched. And we believe it'll be the largest public building program for over 50 years, and it's going to create significant skilled jobs. It's going to provide around 2,000 apprenticeship opportunities, tying up with our apprenticeship policy, which links the apprenticeship to training to the building project. And we also think it'll generate about $2 billion a year in economic growth through extra jobs and spending on construction materials. So it ticks lots of boxes.
So let's just go over those points again. First of all, it gives people the chance to get into their first home, to get their foot on the first rung of that ladder, which is always the hardest part of home ownership.
And they will be sold to first home owners. This is a really important point. We're not building them so a speculator can come in and buy them and then sell them in a few months' time at a higher price. They must be sold to first home buyers and they must live in them, Phil. So we're not in the business of building houses and selling them to people that don't need them. Now, first home buyers, which is totally different to the announcement that we heard from National that was rushed out last Friday when they heard that we had a big housing announcement at our conference. Phil Heatley rushed over to Hobsonville and announced that there would be 600 affordable houses built there, having canned their affordable building program there just in May this year. They've now decided they will build some.
This is a total U-turn, isn't it? Because Labor had a plan to develop Hobsonville to provide affordable housing. John Key didn't want low-income people in his electorate, God forbid, and even less didn't want state houses. Funny, where did he grow up? They dumped the program, and now they've partially bought it back because they were trying to cut Labor off at the pass.
Our program at Hobsonville was very comprehensive, 3,000 houses to be built there. And it's taxpayers own that land. It's not private land. It's owned by the people. And we decided we'd build 3,000 houses there. 500 were to be state houses and 500 were to be affordable. Well, John Key said that would be economic sabotage to build state houses. He then accepted there'd be some affordable before the election, but after the election, they canned a program called Gateway, which was to help people into affordable homes, with only 17 built. So then,
17.
On Friday,
that's one seven houses. Yeah, 17 houses he's built under
yes.
that. Yeah,
and
that's really helped the housing
crisis. Yeah, they're hardly affordable either because some of them are going to be 480 with no criteria. Well, I have met one of the two people who got into the affordable home, one of the 17. This was a young guy of 20 whose parents had given him the money for the deposit. Now, that's great for him, but we're really looking to try and get families into their first home, and we do believe that there needs to be, you know, some effort put in to saving towards a home. That's why we want to make KiwiSaver universal. Mm-hmm. So that there is a saving plan for people, that they have put aside a little money, that they are able to meet their payments, but they will be buying houses that are within the range of modest income earners.
Yeah, and KiwiSaver, as Labor introduced it, had provision for people to use part of their savings for a deposit to get into their first home, doesn't it?
It does, and of course now you're starting to see some people start to use it. So some people qualified after 3 years, a lot of people at 5 years, and that's not a unreasonable period of time for people to put aside some money and save and cash in mm-hmm. on the KiwiSaver opportunity to use it as a deposit. But there are also many other ways, Phil, to get people on modest incomes into our home ownership. And I've been out with the Housing Foundation just this week in Auckland, where they are managing to get people on very modest homes through rent to buy proposals. You know, leaving equity in through the rent and through the equity they've built up in that property when it's sold and so on. So there are different ways you can help people into home ownership. But, you know, the key to it will be having affordable homes for people to buy.
Yeah. No, those shared equity programs are really good. I've got one in my own electorate, actually, in Denny Avenue. Beautiful homes. They're family-size homes. And I was actually out visiting them the other week, and it's a good reflection of Mount Roskill. I did seven houses, and I came across somebody that was Italian, somebody that was Filipino, somebody that was Zimbabwean, somebody that was Indian, somebody that was Tongan Samoan, and it's a multicultural New Zealand. But each of those families I talked to said how great the Housing Foundation had been at getting a way that they could afford. They're all working families. They're working their guts out to try to get into their own home. This gave them a chance for affordable housing. So the Housing Foundation, which is a private trust, we'd work with groups like that to, as part of our program, to get this 100,000 homes, affordable homes, up and built.
We certainly would, and they've got a proven record. They have built over 300 houses, and one of their big developments is out West Auckland, where they built 73 houses. Some of them are four-bedroom, five-bedroom. Some of them are terraced housing with two-bedroom. Absolutely spectacular building, and built whole communities so that they're well-placed, that they have people in a nice environment. Solid housing, brick, wood housing. It was interesting, Phil, talking to them, because one of the criticisms that we've had about our policy announcement was, well, where's the land? You know, the cost of land makes it prohibitive for you to build anything in Auckland. When I talked to the Housing Foundation, they gave me an interesting breakdown of costs of building. And this is in Auckland. They told me that raw land makes up about 15% of the total cost of a house. That the taxes and resource consents, etc., make up about 25%, that the house build itself is about 40% of the cost, and about 20% of it would be the land development. That's, you know, your sewage, your water, your roads going in, etc. And so when you look at it, land is an important part, but it's not the main part and therefore not the main problem. We therefore talked about, well, is there any land in Auckland? And we're talking mainly about Auckland because that's where the big problem is. And that's where we would start our building program, is in Auckland, to release that pressure you've got, where you really need between 10 and 12,000 houses built a year in Auckland alone. And they were able to identify land, particularly government land, that is lying idle, some of it with animals grazing on it, for example, out in Massey. Land that's in Papakura, land that is near Hobsonville, etc. So there is land that the government has done nothing with. Weymouth's another area that's been sitting empty that could perhaps hold 240 houses on it. So one of the things that we want to do, Phil, and you are helping with this, is to meet with the council to talk to them about what land they've got. It is very doable.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with Mayor Len Brown just the other day, and he said to me that they have got 18,000 sections ready to go, and that was the term that he used. and a lot more land beyond that as we found the need to develop more sections. So I guess the other thing we should probably just touch on is that in 21st century Auckland, a lot of these homes are going to be medium density. The housing foundation homes I looked at, they each had their own little backyard, but it's not the old quarter acre section. And probably people don't want to go out and mow the lawns and everything else. As long as, you know, we've got public parks and things like that, we can utilise that. But we are going to have to look at more medium density. So some of these houses, I guess, that we'd be building would be standalone. Some would be maybe terrace housing, modern terrace housing that can be made to look really attractive. And some of it, when I look around Mount Roskill, we've had some of the Housing New Zealand developments, which are cluster housing, where the houses look really, really attractive. And provided the proper amenities are put in place, if there are kiddies there, that works well. So, you know,
You're absolutely right. It's thinking about our housing differently from our big building programs of the 30s, 40s, and then again in the 70s, where it was a standalone house on a big section. That might still happen if you're living in a rural area, but there will be more intensification within our cities. That doesn't mean that you have everyone crowded in with no proper urban planning around places for people to be able to play. Open spaces, transport, etc. You design them so that you get the best advantage. And one of the things that impressed me when I was talking to the Housing Foundation, they build their homes, and you might have noticed this in Denny Avenue, actually, because they pointed it out to me when I was there, that they tilt their houses so that they face the sun. Mm. So you get the best advantage of the sun. So instead of sticking them straight down a section as we used to do, and we might well have the most livable area on the south side, they plan how they will lay them out. So there's a lot more thought goes into making houses livable, warm, and comfortable, even if they don't have the big runaround sections. So you can build terraced housing. I saw some over West Coast Road area this week. Wonderful housing. The gardens had been planted. People were proud of their homes, and they captured the sun. They were well insulated, well built.
Yeah. No, I think the great thing about modern housing is that it does face north. It is double glazed. It's a lot more livable than the sort of places that we put up in the past. Look, that comes to cost, and what Labor has said is that we're looking at around about a housing package of $300,000 per house. And I heard a national minister rubbishing that the other day, so I went down to a local builder, actually Keith Hay Builders in Mount Roskill, who've done a lot of the affordable housing in the past. And they actually told me that in terms of the house cost, and I've got a pamphlet in front of me, they can do a three-bedroom home, 87 square metre. It's a smallish home for about $108,000. Now, you've got your land cost on top of that. But even, a lot of the houses we will be building will be, I think we'll need them to be two, three, four bedroom homes. So that cost of $300,000 is doable, isn't it? Despite what Stephen Joyce might have been claiming in the past, well, maybe.
And also some very poor reporting by TV3, by a reporter that was trying to undermine the costings that we had done. Look, we based the costings that we did on data that comes from Department of Building and Housing, and they said the cost of building a small house, say 145 metres square, is approximately $1,780 a metre. There'd be slight variations according to a region. So the cost of building, say, a 100-metre square house would be around about $180,000. And some would be bigger than that. But you then have to consider that we would also have economies of scale from building in bulk. So, you know, 180 seems pretty reasonable to us. And it was also consistent with the cost of building that came from an independent group that Shane Jones set up when he was Minister of Building and Housing. And they worked out the cost of an entry-level home in 2008 would be around $168,000. So go forward 4 or 5 years, and around $180,000 doesn't seem unreasonable. Then you put your land on top of that, and the average cost of land that's been, you know, fully serviced, etc., is about $100,000. Might be a little higher in Auckland, and you're getting up to around $280,000-$300,000 for a standard size house.
Yeah, so that's pretty reasonable. I suppose it's just a case of a national government saying they've got all these reasons for not doing something and can't find a good reason for meeting the housing crisis and meeting people's basic needs. So need to get them proportioned.
They think the market will decide. We have got market failure in affordable housing in New Zealand. And any reputable commentator, economist, person on the street will tell you that houses are just not affordable for low and modest income earners. And I'm talking about people that can be on, you know, on two incomes earning $100,000 a year, finding it impossible to be able to get into a home.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, just we've only got a few minutes left to go, but there was another part of the policy that dealt with rental homes. And one of our concerns with rental homes has been that a whole, you know, I see a lot of families in my electorate that come in that have constant health problems because of cold, damp houses. What's Labor going to do about that?
Well, this is something we are acutely aware of. You know, and as Health Minister, I was very aware that children that were kept coming to hospital, repeated admission, came from very poor housing, cold, damp, lots of respiratory disease, asthma, skin disorders and so on. So we're very aware that housing is fundamental to good health. And we introduced, you recall, an insulation and a heating program where we provided a subsidy to encourage landlords to take up a government subsidy to insulate their homes and put in non-polluting heating. Unfortunately, only around 5% of landlords took up that subsidy, and in fact it runs out in 2013. And a survey that was done in 2010 found that only 22% of our rental properties were in good condition and 44% of them were in poor condition. So we have said enough's enough. Finally, you can't just keep giving carrot. There does have to be at some stage some stick. So we have said that we will require, under the Residential Tenancy Act, that all homes will be insulated. And obviously, with older homes, you can't get into the walls, but you can get into roofs, and some you can get under floors, but they will be insulated and they will be heated. And the trigger for this will be when a tenancy changes, then they will be required to undertake the insulation and the heating. Now, we know the worst homes, where the tenancy turns over rapidly and often, are the poorest homes. So it will require landlords who have not bothered to insulate and heat their houses to undertake that work before they can lease it out again.
I think that'll be a good idea for the health of our kids overall, and there'll be big savings to make there. Now, look, we're just about out of time, so I just want to sum up that package. So the first thing is it's 100,000 modern affordable homes over the next decade. It's doable. We'll start that off with a fund of money, $1.5 billion, and then rolling that money over as the houses are sold, that will pay for the next lot. That will not only get thousands of families into their own home and meet that dream, but it'll also create thousands of jobs as we get the industry going, thousands of apprenticeship positions so that we can get our young people skilled and trained. And we'll have a program for rental housing that'll deal with a long-standing problem that too many of our kids are getting ill because of cold, damp houses in unacceptable conditions. So, Annette, thanks for coming on the radio today. Thanks for all the work you put into that package. Great speech by David Shearer to launch it. And you'll be going out and around the country and telling New Zealanders about that. So look forward to hearing more from you on the program in the future. Thanks very much for coming on today. And this is Phil Goff, Labor MP for Mount Roskill, closing Red Alert Radio today. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/Red Alert Radio.